call the meeting of the Carson City Planning Commission of Wednesday, December 21st, to order. The first item on the agenda is a roll call. Kathy?
Chairperson Esswein?
Here.
Vice Chairperson Sattler?
Here.
Commissioner Borders?
Here.
Commissioner Monroy?
Here.
Commissioner Salerno?
Here.
Commissioner Green?
Here.
Commissioner Owens?
Here.
Quorum is present.
Thank you. Mr. Salerno, would you lead us in the pledge, please?
Yes,
please rise for the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
At this time, the public is invited to comment on and discuss any topic that is relevant to or within the authority of the Planning Commission, including any matter that is not specifically included on the agenda as an action item. Is there anyone here who wishes to address the Commission on an item not on the agenda? Okay, seeing none, we will move on to Item C, approval of minutes. We have no minutes to approve. We will put off approval of the notes.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
For the benefit of the record, the reason the minutes have not been completed is your last meeting was rather long. You'll recall you didn't even get through your agenda. And this meeting is earlier than usual due to the holidays. So there is a statute requiring that you adopt your minutes within a certain time frame, and you will be outside that time frame, but outside that time frame with good cause. So I need this to be part of the record. Okay. And it would be appropriate then to just continue that item to the next meeting.
Yes. So we will, do we need a motion to continue, or is it just a, okay. So we will continue approval of the minutes of November 30th. Till the next scheduled meeting of the Planning Commission. Item D is modification of the agenda. Items on the agenda may be taken out of order. The public body may combine two or more agenda items for consideration, and the public body may remove an item from the agenda or delay discussion relating to an item on the agenda at any time. Mr. Plamel?
No changes recommended by staff.
Any commissioners have any changes? Okay. Item E, disclosures. Any member of the commission may wish to explain any contact with an applicant or the public regarding an item on the agenda or business of the commission. I will be recusing myself from a discussion of item F4, and at which time I will officially remove myself from the podium. Moving on to item F, which are public hearing matters. Item F1. Miscellaneous-16-184 for possible action. To make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors regarding an ordinance to place a moratorium for a period of up to 180 days with the ability to extend it by resolution for up to an additional 60 days on the acceptance and processing of planning and other applications for construction and operation of marijuana establishments as contemplated by the Regulation and Taxation of Marijuana Act passed by the Nevada voters during the general election on November 8, 2016.
Trying to get the presentation going.
Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry. Thank you. For the record, Lee Plamel, Community Development Director. I'll be given a brief presentation on this item. So as you've noted, this is an action to make a recommendation regarding an ordinance on a moratorium for new marijuana establishments, specifically as contemplated by the Regulation and Taxation of Marijuana Act that was passed by the Nevada voters during the general election this year in 2016. So this process that we're going through here is very similar to when medical marijuana was approved and passed by the voters and then going to the legislature. So the purpose of a moratorium means that for a certain period of time, in this case about 6 months, 6 to 8 months, there's an absolute prohibition against us accepting zoning applications or business licenses or building permits for new marijuana establishments. This proposed moratorium would exclude existing medical marijuana establishments that have certificates through the state, that are currently licensed through the state, all of which are shown on this map now, which, you know, includes up to, it includes two dispensaries, three cultivation facilities, and then there's also three facilities that are a combination of cultivation and production facilities. The two dispensaries are open. I believe there's now two cultivation facilities that are open and operating, and there are still some that are either looking, haven't built in their current location and are possibly considering other locations. So this moratorium would not preclude those with existing licenses from possibly coming back if they needed a special use permit for a new location or their special use has expired. So only these existing establishments would be exempt from the moratorium. So there would be nobody can come in for a cultivation and say they're for medical marijuana at this point if the ordinance were passed as permitted. And this, again, the purpose of the moratorium is to see what regulations the Department of Taxation come up with, the legislature comes up with, and how that's going to all tie together between new medical marijuana establishments and new, I guess, recreational marijuana establishments, as I've phrased it in the staff report, but I guess generally call them MEs, marijuana establishments. So this would, again, I think this is pretty straightforward at this point. It's the thing to do until we know what the regulations are. The complete act is attached in there, and you have information on it. We still don't know a lot about it, which is why we want to have the moratorium. So with that summary, I'll conclude my presentation and be happy to take questions.
Does anyone have any questions? Mr. Sadler.
The ones, cultivation and productions that were approved that aren't in the works yet, how long, was that a year they have from when they were approved before they have to come back to us?
Well, so with the special use permit, it's a year and then a year administrative extension. There's actually one on the list up there, and this is in your packet, by the way, so you can look at, if you can't read that, it's in your packet. There's one for whom the special use permit has expired. Again, they may still have a valid license with the state and approval to do it. So I think those are the ones that, if they need to renew their special use permit, they could come back and do it. But yes, they're in various stages as listed in your
package. And because they still have your approval from the state, they'd be able to come back to us again.
Yes.
Are there any other questions? Okay. Is anyone in the audience wish to address this item? Seeing none, I will bring it back for discussion among the commission. Any comments or discussion? Go ahead.
I move to recommend the Board of Supervisors approve an ordinance declaring a moratorium of a period of up to 180 days with the ability to extend it by resolution for up to an additional 60 days, the acceptance and processing of planning and other applications for construction or operation of new marijuana establishments based on the findings contained in the staff report.
We have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second by Ms. Green. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
We have one no, Mr. Salerno. Motion passes. Moving on to item F2. SUP-16-181 for possible action. To consider a request from Carson Nugget, property owner Adams Carson Limited, LLC, for a special use permit to allow placement of two metal storage containers in the downtown mixed-use zoning district on properties located at 405 and 495 East Spear Street, APNs 004-223-06 and 07. Ms. Sullivan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hope Sullivan, Planning Manager. The applicant is requesting a special use permit to place storage units on property zoned downtown mixed use. The subject property is located, and I have a map up on the wall, on the south side of Spear, east of Stewart Street. The units are currently being stored on Robinson and Stewart, so you'll see, I'll point it out with the arrow. Currently, they're being stored here at Robinson and Stewart, and the proposal is to relocate them over here on the east side of Stewart, south of Spear. When they were being, well, let me back up. These units are allowed to be stored for up to 90 days. The applicant exceeded the 90 days, so we started working with the applicant to identify an alternative location. This is a picture of the units. In looking at an alternative location, we looked at various properties in the city that are under the control of the property owner, and this struck us as the least visible location of that list of properties we looked at. The land use to the south is a single-family home and an office. There is a solid wooden fence, which you'll see in this picture, along the southern property line. And as the storage units are quiet and don't really generate an impact, we felt they would further buffer the single-family home and the office use from any of the adverse impacts in the parking lot. The Municipal Code Section 1802.062 identifies the 7 required findings for a special use permit, and the staff was able to make these findings in the affirmative. I do want to note that Section 9L of the development standards states that when you have these type of storage units, they are to be reviewed every 5 years. In my observation, these units tend to be with industrial buildings or with schools and things like that, and the review has tended to be an administrative review. Given that this site is in the downtown, staff has recommended, and we put this in the conditions of approval, that the review is subject to the Planning Commission review in the 5-year interval. So the Planning Commission will have the opportunity to determine if this site continues to be appropriate for these type of units. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer those. Dean DeLillo with the Nugget is present, and with that, I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for staff? Mr. Sadler.
I'm sure it's in there, but I did not know. How tall are those units? Do you know?
I believe they were 8 feet tall.
So they'd be approximately 2 feet above the fence is all. Okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Mr. Salerno.
In looking at the discussion, a special use permit is granted to allow permanent placement. And I know that we have a 5-year review. Why is the word permanent in there?
As I mentioned, if it were a temporary placement, like let's pretend a new office building was going to move into a building, they could be there for up to 90 days. In excess of 90 days would be considered a permanent installation. So I think when you consider these, you're considering them as a permanent feature.
Thank you.
Mr. Borders.
Does the fence belong to the Nugget or the residential owners? And who's responsible for it?
I need the owner to speak to that. I can't speak to that.
Okay. Does this in any way impact the parking requirements of the Nugget?
No, their parking is far in excess of what's required. And okay. This is, as I understand it, overflow parking for RVs.
Could they, in it conceivably after... Instead of using these metal containers, could they build a building there, a warehouse?
It would be in the downtown mixed use, so do we allow storage?
Yeah, I think we can look it up. I don't think a warehouse is a permitted use in the downtown mixed use, and honestly, I don't think it's a permanent structure that is a warehouse in that area. It's probably not something that is desired either. I think if there's a positive thing about the temporary is that when it's something more economically viable that can go on that parcel, those things are gone immediately. You're not having to tear down a structure.
Yeah, but it's really become a permanent temporary structure. It's a warehouse in a temporary container that's going to be there forever.
Well, so the forever I think was so as the term is used in the code, anything over 90 days is permanent.
Okay.
So. I think part of what Hope's presentation was the 5-year review, and it does have to be reviewed every 5 years. That's for its continued appropriateness at that location.
And does that also mean that if we approve this one special use permit, that anybody else in the downtown district can also petition us for a special use permit for temporary containers on their parking lot?
In the downtown, the temporary containers would be subject to a special use permit. When you look at a special use permit, you're looking at the findings and the appropriateness of the site. So could they petition for it? 100% yes. Would you always find the site to be appropriate and always be able to make the required findings? Not necessarily. And in fact, in this case, Kathy Green and I drove around, and I think we probably looked at about 8 different sites, and we found this site to be one where potentially it would be okay because you do have that fence. It's on the east side of Stewart. Does that mean it would still be okay in 5 years? I'm not sure. We'd have to see how things evolved. But those other sites I looked at in the downtown, I was not ready to support.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
And these units could not be moved without coming back to us from that site once it's approved, correct? We're approving the site as much as we're approving the units.
That's correct.
Thank you. Mr. Owen?
Are there any restrictions on what can be stored in those containers?
The regulations do say you cannot store hazardous materials and you cannot use it for any type of occupancy or habitation or anything like that. So there are limitations in the code.
Okay. I have a question or an observation. As a practical matter, a special use permit is it's a determination that a use is appropriate in a zoning district. Once you've approved that use, can you actually put a time limitation on the use? You can put it as long as the conditions continue to be met. Could you remove that use from consideration?
It's not uncommon for in general when considering special use permits, or sometimes they're called conditional use permits, to have sunset clauses. I don't personally like them. Now, what the code does say is this is subject to review every 5 years, just like those containers at schools or in industrial settings. In this case, I'm suggesting that rather than staff handling that review, it be subject to review by the Planning Commission. And the real concern I have is I think right now we have a certain land development, if you will, in the downtown, and in particular in that area of Stewart, where I think these are okay right now. I can't predict what 5 years from now will look like, and I would hope that in 5 years from now, these aren't going to be appropriate, because I'd hope that downtown will have grown and we'd see revitalization in that area, and at that point, there's a better use there and the appropriateness isn't as obvious.
I'll wait till we hear from the applicant, but I do have some concerns. Mr. Sattler.
But once we approve the 5 years, that's good for 5 years. We couldn't come back in 2 or 3 and say, okay, thank you.
Okay. Is the applicant here who might wish to discuss or make any comments?
Good afternoon. Dean DeLillo from the Carson Nugget. Want to wish you guys a happy holiday.
You know, wish to add anything to the staff report, or have you read the staff report?
I have.
And you're familiar with the conditions and you find them acceptable?
I do.
Okay. Mr. Borders, I believe you had a question that needed to be answered by the applicant on the fence ownership.
The ownership of the fence. Does that belong to the Nugget, or does that belong to the houses about the property?
I believe it belongs to the houses. I could be wrong, but I don't believe we maintain it. We do not maintain it, so I don't believe that it's our fence.
Okay. Well, the question was going to eventually boil down to who maintains the fence.
Yeah, we do not.
Okay.
We do not.
Thank you.
Yeah. I would like to add something that to support what staff's recommendation is. That used to be an RV park run by the Nugget. And we used to get some complaints from the owners of the house when the people in the RV would be talking and doing whatever you do in an RV. So what I did, I was very proactive, worked with staff. We relocated all the RV parking over to the lot that we do maintain across Stewart Street. And by putting the containers there, it creates a buffer so no one can park there. So the homeowners right now are probably really, really happy. I've got zero complaints from them since I've moved all the RV parking over. And to be honest with you, I think the highest and best use for that lot is coming. These are temporary structures that can be moved at any time. And, you know, we and the foundation would love to develop that lot to match whatever the highest and best use of that area is. Although it says permanent, I think we all realize it's semi-permanent. It exceeds the 90 days, but they can be moved at any time. And I'm very willing to work with development to develop that corridor at any time. So I think this is more procedure and protocol than really trying to get approval to do something with that land. I think the highest best use is probably an office building or something that gets built on there. And again, at any time that the land begins to be developed, I'll completely work and comply and make sure that you guys are developing Stewart Street to look the very best that it could look.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. DeLille? Mr. Owen.
What is currently stored in those containers?
Slot machines.
Pardon?
Slot machines.
And how is that transported from the Nugget back and forth to the containers?
A vehicle, just like currently. It's only moving, you know, a block. So a slot technician would go over, move the slot machine from the container to a truck, move it to the Nugget, move it back.
Thank you.
Mr. Sadler.
So again, this is for overflow, but by the way you're placing those, the RVs would be then on the north side of the lot, away from the houses even more. So they're going to be on that lot.
If we elected to put the RVs there, but the first step.
Right now there's nothing going on.
There used to be RVs. I was proactive and moved all the RVs first. We got them situated. The RV owners are very excited to be closer to the Nugget, and the homeowners are very excited not to have any RVs there. These provide a barrier, a buffer, so that no matter what, no one could run through our chains and park there and disturb the homeowners.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions? It's not really a question, I guess. I can phrase it as a question. So you indicated that you agree that these are temporary structures and that if it's determined that it isn't appropriate in the future, after 5 years, if they're still there, hopefully they're not, but that you would consider it appropriate for the staff or the Planning Commission to determine that it was no longer a use that we wanted to have on that lot?
Yes.
Okay.
Agreed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think we all agree that, that there's a master plan happening for Stewart Street that's going to be wonderful, and everything needs to be improved, and I think everyone needs to participate and help on that plan, and I'm definitely part of that plan.
Yeah. I just don't want to, you know, make an approval that becomes permanent and, you know, the owner, for whatever reason, in the future says, well, we need to have them there, when it's not really an appropriate use in that area. I mean, it may be in 5 years, I don't know, but it may not be. And I just want to be sure that we have the option of having them removed if necessary.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Salerno.
The containers will be located right next to the fence. Is that right?
I think there's going to be probably a 12-foot buffer, and I could work with staff to create any type of buffer. It's really going to sit in the parking spots. There's a certain number of feet between the parking spots and the fence. What that is, I'm not sure. And we can locate them when we move them to any. I could have been in the middle of the lot. I just figured that putting them as close to the lot, creating a buffer, would be the better thing to do. And so we have flexibility, since they are very mobile, to move them. I don't want to move them more than once. So I think what's, if I follow staff's recommendation and move them once and place them where they've recommended, I think it's the best for the homeowners, best for the land, and best for the containers. But I'm flexible.
The adjacent homeowner wanted to replace or repair the fence.
And plenty of space.
It might be too close to the
fence. Plenty of room to maintain, guaranteed.
Thank you.
Yeah, there's actually a parking stop, I believe, that prevents you from getting too close. And see those metal poles? There's a buffer there, too.
Yeah, looks like
and I will guarantee that there's access and maintenance and enough space to get behind the container and repair the fence if necessary.
Thank you.
Mr. Salerno, or Commissioner Salerno, on page 20 of your packet, you'll see a graphic that shows a 5-foot offset from that fence.
Okay, are there any other questions for the applicant? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll bring it back to the commission for discussion.
Why does it have to say permanent?
Well, can we come up with some language that would remove the permanent and include temporary for a period of not to exceed 5 years? In the staff report, though. Yeah. And the staff report is included in the motion.
So we're just looking at the motion over here. The motion doesn't say
right, but
permanent. It says that you're approving the special use permit, which is subject to the conditions of approval, which
right. So if we added in the conditions of approval that the permit wouldn't exceed 5 years, then
so like with okay, but in 5 years you can reapprove it or not.
I would prefer that it said that it expired in 5 years and that they could come back for another special use permit if they felt that they needed
okay.
to keep them there.
Okay, that's one way to address it.
Mr. Chair, just to make sure we don't have conflicting language, I would suggest if that's going to be the motion that condition number 10 be modified to state that the special use permit is in place for 5 years and will expire in December 2021. Any interest on the part of the property owner to renew it is subject to a new special use permit for review and approval by the Planning Commission.
I think that's appropriate. Is that, or the applicant has indicated that he's okay with that addition to the, or change to the? Yes, oh, right, thank you. Is there anyone in here from the public who wishes to address this item? Please step forward.
Yeah, my name is Dave Ongst. I live at the 500 block of East Spear. There's a long history with this lot. It was an RV lot. I found out that the lot had changed hands, and Carson Nugget was no longer patrolling that area. They used to keep some semblance of water there. So they said, well, we don't own it anymore. We're not going to, we're not patrolling it. So I contacted the owner in Meridian, Idaho, Adams LLC, and they were very prompt in getting the lot cleaned out. There was the fence was falling down. I don't know, it would be nice if somebody would fix the fence, but one positive thing if these containers go there would cover up the ugly fence because parts of the fence is missing, it's multicolored, and there was a lot of it falling down. But like I said, Adams LLC cleaned it all out, and they put up barriers, and they blocked off the RV sign. They did move the RVs across the street, which is fine. Okay, because the other problem was it was not only transient or tourists coming through staying at the Nugget. It turned out to be a lot for transient people living there with barking dogs, and they were letting their dogs run on the lot and dumping the feces in the gutter. So that's what prompted this whole thing, to have it blocked off. So fine, it's been blocked off now. The containers are probably okay with me. You know, they would cover up the ugly fence. The other problem is I would hope that they would continue to keep the thing blocked off, the lot, so nobody could park in there. And also, is there anything we could do about people from the Carson Nugget using it as a dog park? We still have a problem with people letting their dogs, taking their dogs or letting their dogs run over there and using it as a rest area for their dogs. So that is my concern with the lot right now.
Thank you. There was another.
My name is Bryce White, and I'm a resident on 503 East Robinson. So that is, there's two houses per block there. There's one house between me and where these are proposed to go. I would say, please do not allow these containers to go further into a mixed neighborhood, which is historic. My house was built 1919. The area has been coming up. It's been going down in the past, and now when a property changes hands, there's a lot of investment going on, and the properties are coming up in value. Now we're going to move an industrial container into this, proposed to move it into further into this neighborhood. It's not an improvement at all. It will make the neighborhood worse. I'm okay with the idea that you got to get stuff done, you got to need a place to store stuff, and a 90-day permit with an administrative renewal is a lot more comfortable to me than a 5-year with an administrative renewal. I think it will become permanent there. I don't know how long those containers have been on the lot that's further into the business district, but they've been there a long time. I don't know. Maybe you want to ask, but I know they've been there at least 6 or 8 years, probably more. Yeah, that's where they are. At minimum, if you allow this, I mean, just to say I want to put it there because I don't happen to own any land anywhere else that's more appropriate to put it is not an excuse. I don't want to put you probably won't let me put a shooting range in my backyard because I don't happen to have any other property that's out in the wilderness. So I don't think that's a good reason for saying that this is an appropriate place to put it. There's storage locations where you can put a slot machine. They're going to put it on a truck anyway. Truck it somewhere else if it's not further into a neighborhood that's mixed office and housing. At minimum, if you do decide to go forward with this, which I hope you don't, at minimum, at least have a facade on the outside of it, some wood facade to make it blend in, painted to match, maybe some fake windows on it or something like Walmart does when they move into a neighborhood that's downtown, you know? That's my two cents. You know, I'm excited about the improvement down there that's going to go on those lots, and I know that there's going to be some industrial activity there, and maybe they need that lot for park tractors on or whatever they have to do temporarily. But I'm afraid this will become permanent, just like it has where it's at now.
That's it. Thank you. Is there any other public comment? Seeing none, we'll bring it back for discussion. Ms. Green.
This is a question for staff. How long have they been there?
Or maybe for the applicant.
I just know it's in excess of 90 days. I don't know the exact start date.
Would the applicant be able to address that item or that question?
I don't know the exact date, but I purchased them sometime in 2016, earlier this year, maybe at the end of 15.
And moved them onto that lot at that time?
They were purchased, and that was their home. That they have never been anywhere other than on the corner of Stewart and Robinson.
And did you place them there?
Or? I purchased them,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
You purchased them meaning?
I bought the containers.
That were already sitting on that lot?
No, they weren't.
No.
Okay.
No. Yeah. For clarification, I purchased them. They were there. One thing we did do is the containers are not very attractive when we purchased them. We did paint them a neutral color, as the gentleman just recommended, to make them blend in more. So they have been recently painted, so they blend in and they don't stand out.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Any discussion, comments? So for clarification from staff, a special use, this is a use that's permitted by special use permit in the downtown mixed-use district?
Correct.
Okay. So any property owner within that district could come forward with a request for a special use permit to locate a storage container by special use permit?
Correct.
Mr. Owen.
Were they already permitted to be in the existing location?
You mean the under 90 days?
Well, you said they've gone beyond, okay, you're right, beyond the 90 days, and that's why.
So no, since it's past 90 days, if the applicant had sought a special use permit for the existing location, the staff was not prepared to support that request.
So the owner mentioned it was late 2015 or early 2016, so it's been like at least 10 or 11 months they've been there, correct?
I can't verify the date they arrived. It's whatever the owner advised you. I have no reason
So what brought it to the attention of the 90 days?
It was a code enforcement case.
A code enforcement, okay.
Well, I have to say, I totally understand the predicament of both the applicant and the property owner who indicated that he was not comfortable having that there. And I guess I would be willing to entertain some alternative if anybody had any ideas on how we might achieve that.
I don't know if possibly shortening the time frame of the approval would be appropriate or more acceptable if it was for 2 years or three, whatever. I mean, I'm not sure. It depends on development down there, I guess, as to how soon that might change or something, but I do have a little heartburn with the 5 years.
And I think another alternative, obviously, is to relocate them to an area where he doesn't even need a permit, which would be an industrial area. And since he's going to be using a vehicle to transport machines back and forth anyway, you know, a mile or two difference might not make that much difference. It might not be that big an issue.
But in this case, he owns the land and he owns the units. So
right.
He may not own industrial land is the problem.
Well, but there's industrial land for lease. And,
that's true.
Under the code, could we limit the time period to less than 5 years?
You can if that's what's necessary to make the findings. You would do it within the framework of the findings.
Well, does 2 years make sense then? Or something?
A yearly would make sense to me.
Well, the only problem with doing it yearly is that we've created another agenda item for ourselves every year. And it may not make any difference, but do we want to start doing that?
Are we at liberty to ask the gentleman that was opposed as to his anything or whatever? He was going to make another comment.
I mean, we can, the public, we haven't closed the public hearing, so I think that we can ask him to step forward. And, yeah.
You have a question? I have a comment, but you have a question.
Yeah, your comment first, I guess.
My comment would be that please think of this as if two houses down, one of your neighbors wanted to put a shipping container on his property. That's what it's going to be for me and for my neighbors. And I know I'm not the only one who's going to, it's just that I'm the only one that's got time to come over here and talk about this. There's going to be a lot more talk about it once it goes there among the neighbors. So I happen to be the guy that could come down here and say something. If this was going to be $2 down from you, he wanted to put it there, would you be entertaining 5 year with an administrative approval that just automatically happens, or even bring it up here every year or two? Would you be okay with that, or would you want him to have a 90-day permit and basically re-justify it every time he wants to leave it another 90 days? That's what it was, and it was further out into the business district, and now it's coming into an office housing neighborhood for longer than 90 days.
If you have a question?
Yeah,
I have a question.
Go ahead, Mr. Owen.
Yeah. So is there a time frame that makes you happy?
Yeah, I think the 90-day permit is appropriate for a shipping container or any kind of industrial use inside of a neighborhood that people are sleeping, waking up, and conducting their daily lives. I mean, this is something I'm going to live with.
Right. I'd like to add that if I had a parking lot that looked like that, two doors down from me, I probably wouldn't have a problem with the containers. It's not like there's a house there.
I agree that the containers will be probably quiet, but they won't make the neighborhood look like it's continuing to come up the way it has been. And there are some houses in the neighborhood that are extremely dilapidated. I'm confident that those houses, when they change hands, are going to become like most of the other ones that have changed hands recently and come up. Any other questions?
Any other questions? Any more comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
The alternate to that is if the Nugget can move them on their property every 90 days, they have more than enough property to play musical containers for the next 10 years. So if you say, all right? Well, there's a lot of property, and each one's got four sides. I mean, you could, but I'm saying from the flip side of that is, if the Nugget can keep them there for 90 days, and then before the code enforcement officer shows up, they move them to the other side of the same lot for 90 days, and then they move them to the corner for 90 days, you could create something in perpetuity, and it doesn't solve any problem. So.
Mr. Sadler.
I still would be more comfortable with 2 or 3 years instead of 5.
Absolutely.
But again, I don't know if that can be done or not.
Absolutely. I think under finding number 7, if I'm not, that would be the appropriate place to make a finding that a more restricted time period would be appropriate.
Mr. Chair, if I may, Hope Sullivan, Planning Manager. I'm actually looking at finding 2. And before I get into the finding, the conversation I'm hearing is very similar to what staff's thinking was. Our downtown's gentrifying. Our residential areas near downtown are gentrifying. We recognize that. We're excited about that, 100%. The Nugget's gentrifying. They're part of that whole movement, if you will. And there's a need to store some stuff, okay? Could you store it on industrial land? Yeah, you could. Is this a problem, this particular site along this fence, 5 feet offset, given the existing condition of that area, recognizing everything's gentrifying? Staff was able to make the findings today, but we recognize that we may not, and we hope we cannot make those findings in 5 years, which is why, of everything, I think that's the only thing I pointed out to you, except for where this is and what they're proposing. Because we do recognize the gentrification. We do recognize the investment going on in the community. So I would suggest that the board look at finding 2, which talks about the peaceful enjoyment, economic value, and development of the surrounding properties or the general neighborhood, and the compatibility. And I hear you struggling with time frames. I would suggest that everybody's part of this gentrification, including the applicant. And they do own this land. And I really believe that you can make the findings today based on that site and the condition of that site right now. Having said that, if 5 years isn't the right number, I leave it to the commission to decide what is. Thank you.
You were going to make a motion?
Yeah, I'm fine with the motion that it stands.
It's still open for public comment?
Yes, until we have a motion.
Yeah, Dave Unks again from Spear Street. I'm understanding that this all arrived because of code enforcement is asking them to move the containers. If you're going to make a special dispensation to move them to this lot, why can't you just allow them to leave them where they are and keep them in the same position? It's a lot less intrusive to the neighborhood to have them on their lot than to move them, like the other gentleman said, closer to a residential area.
Well, I think that I don't want to speak for the applicant, but my understanding is that if they weren't going to locate the containers on the parcel that we're talking about, then they have to be able to do something with that parcel, and they would be parking, given that it's paved and set up for that. And would that be a better use?
I don't understand what you're saying.
Well, they're gonna use that parcel right there for some use. That's their right, and parking is an allowed use.
As far as I understand, Lunga doesn't own that. It's Adams LLC.
Well, that's who owns the containers also.
Well, anyway. But the point is, if you're going to make a special case for them to locate them there, why don't you just let them leave them where they are?
Well, then they're going to the option is to put parking back on that lot.
Or RVs. Well, no, the option isn't that. No.
Well, they're not going to let it stand vacant or unused.
Well, they have been for years.
Well, they've had RVs on it.
Well, no, but they stopped that because they don't own the land. They've moved them to their own lot.
Well, but that's because I think the property, I don't know what the history of the lot changes are or ownership, but I believe that they would put another use on that was allowed.
Well, they is Adams LLC, not Nugget.
Well, Adams LLC could lease that land to the Nugget.
Mr. Chair, yeah. If I may. I'll just remind the commission, and I did speak to this earlier, that as part of correcting this situation, the applicant did identify a number of sites, including the existing site, where he would be willing to move those units. And of all the sites we viewed, the staff found this to be the one site that where we could make the findings. And I'll just offer that to the commission.
And just to the question on ownership, Adams LLC owns all the land, all the parking lots, and including the land that the Nugget's on. They're the owners, so it's kind of one and the same. It's permitted Nugget parking. It's part of the historic and you parking lot use and Nugget use there.
Well, I think that's what that's zoned for. That lot is for a parking or a garage. That's true, but The thing was, since Nugget was, security was no longer patrolling that lot, keeping quasi-order, you know, that's why we took steps to have it cordoned off so that nobody could pull in there. Well, anyway, that's my comment.
Okay, I'm ready to bring it back to the commission for a motion.
Unless the commission would like to change the time frame.
Put your mic on.
Unless the commission wants to change the time frame, I no longer have a problem with that. I'm ready to make a motion as it stands.
Is there any discussion on that?
Seeing none?
Seeing none, we'll entertain your motion.
Okay, I move to approve SUP 181, a special use permit request from the Carson Nugget property owner, Adams Carson, LLC, for placement of two metal storage containers in the downtown mixed-use zoning district located at 405 and 495 East Spear Street, APNs 004-223-06 and 004-223-07, based on the findings and subject to conditions of approval contained in the staff report.
Do you want to limit it to a five-year period, in which case they have to come back for a new permit?
That sounds fine. Yes.
Okay. So we will we'll amend condition number 10 to read: the placement of the containers shall be in place for no more than 5 years, and expire in December of 2021.
And just for clarification on that condition, Mr. Chair, it's a special use permit which would expire in 5 years' time, and should the applicant seek to continue to keep the units placed on that parcel past that five-year period, it would be subject to a new special use permit.
Yes, that is the understanding. Okay. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second by Mr. Salerno. Is there any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Item F3, SUP-16-182 for possible action. To consider a request for a special use permit from Delbir and Jurit Singh, property owner Delbir and Jurit Singh, to allow single-family residential use in the retail commercial zoning district on property located at 3140 East Nye Lane, APN 008-191-08. Ms. Sullivan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The applicant is seeking a residential use in the RC zoning district or retail commercial zoning district, which means it's a conditional use and a special use permit is required. The property is located on the north side of Nye Lane, east of Airport Road. The subject property currently has two buildings on the site, if you were able to visit the site. The building, to the left, but I'm not sure if to your left. The one I'm pointing at is the one they're proposing to convert to a residential unit, and the building with the white roof is currently a convenience store. There are mobile home residences to the east, the south, and the west, and there's a contractor's office to the north. Section 1802.062 of the Municipal Code provides 7 required findings for a conditional use permit. The staff has reviewed those findings, and we were able to make them in the affirmative. The staff report did not review the supplemental findings required in Section 1.18 of the development standards. So for the record, I will identify that the staff can make those required findings as well. Specifically, the subject property is not located in a primary commercial arterial, which actually really surprised me. When I went from Highway 50 down Airport Road, it's all houses. I was surprised. I don't know. if you all expected that, but I didn't. And then it's also integrated with a mixed-use development. Now, typically, when we traditionally think about mixed use, you think of retail on the ground floor and residential above. Here, they're side by side. You have retail in one building right next door, the residential. So staff can make those supplemental findings required in Section 1.18 of the development standards. Staff also recommends one additional condition, which I have spoken to the applicant about. And the additional condition is that the applicant will demonstrate compliance with open space and landscaping requirements as identified in the development standards 1.18 at the time of building permit. They will need to obtain a building permit to convert this space, which has historically been an office space, into a residential space. And so at that time, we can verify compliance with open space and landscaping. Here's a picture of the building they're proposing to convert into a house. And staff does support this. I'm happy to answer questions, and the applicant is present.
Are there any questions for staff? Let the record show that Ms. Monroy has left the building.
Merry Christmas.
Okay, seeing none. Is the applicant here? Does the applicant wish to address this item? And I'm sorry if I mispronounce your names. It's
yes, sir. My name is Dalveer Singh.
Okay, thank you. And do you have anything to add to this, the staff report? Have you've read the staff report? You're in agreement with the conditions of approval?
Yes, yeah.
Including the additional one that they?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Do you have anything else that you would like to add to this?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Does anyone have any questions for the applicant? Mr. Borders.
I have a question. I'm not sure it's to the applicant or to the staff, but this is solely a single-family residence, correct?
Yes, a single-family, yes.
Just one house? We're not going to make a duplex or something?
No.
Okay.
And I imagine same whether for him or staff, the way it's zoned, that couldn't be sold separately, one or the other. The business could be sold and kept the house or vice versa.
Correct. There are two buildings on one piece of property, so you'd need to subdivide the land.
Thank you.
Well, I think technically you could sell the building but not the land. Or you could sell the business but not the building.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But be that as it may, I don't think it's relevant. Well, I guess there aren't any more questions for you. I'm going to ask the public if there's anyone here from the public. Doesn't look like it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thanks.
Okay, I will bring it back for discussion or a motion. Okay, Ms. Green.
I move to approve SUP 182, a special use permit to request Dalbir Singh, a property owner is Dalbir and Girat Singh, to allow a single family residential use in the retail zoning commercial zoning district located at 3140 East Nye Lane, APN 008-191-08, based on the findings and subject to the conditions of approval contained in the staff report.
Including the additional No, it's not in the staff report.
The additional condition for the benefit of the record would be that the applicant will demonstrate compliance with the open space and landscaping requirements identified in development standards 1.18 at the time of building permit.
Yes, that too.
Okay. We have a motion. Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
We have a motion and a second by Mr. Sattler. Any further discussion on the motion? I will ask for the vote then. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is unanimous with one absent. Ms. Monroy, 6-0. Thank you. Item F4. At this time, after conferring with the district attorney, I have determined that I may have a conflict of interest on this item and will have decided that I will be removing myself from the discussion. My wife is an employee of the Nevada Higher Education System, and who is the the part of the application. So I will be stepping down, and Mr. Sattler will conduct the meeting.
Mr. Chair, take a minute.
Can we? We can recess for 5 minutes.
Okay.
I think we need. We have a bunch of old men here.
Fighter pilot. Absolutely. Well, no, actually, everything that I've now bought, I have to find some place to wrap it all, because I don't do that.
Oh, see, well, I just need to lock myself in
the
room. Yes. I need to just lock myself in my room. That's all I'm talking about. But there's too much for that.
I did all my shopping online.
I did most of mine online. I got all the Amazon packages. I just need to open them all.
Now, technically speaking, if you bring in a box of chocolates that has a ribbon around it,
perfect.
Just put a label on it for somebody,
that's
right?
You just get the bows and the little stickers that have the name on it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all you got to do. Nothing fancy.
Especially if it's a clothes label, because they'll see what it is, but they won't know who it's for.
Yeah. Those are inexpensive and easy to stick on.
Gift cards for all the kids.
That's why my grandma called and said this. He's like, your kids are getting gift cards because I don't know anymore. I'm like, yeah, they're getting to that age where they're just expensive and hard.
And who doesn't like to end up at the end of Christmas with a couple $100, you know? Yeah.
That's what I told my friend.
Thank you.
we'll bring the meeting back to order. Let's see. Handle agenda item F4. Action to make a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors regarding an ordinance and amending Title 18, Appendix Carson City Development Standards by amending Division 4, Sign Chapter 4.4, Administration Section 4.47, exemption by adding thereto a new subsection 4.7.x, which exempts the division's certain off-premise electronic message display signs, amending Title 18, Appendix Carson City Development Standards by amending Division 4, Sign Chapter 4.6, General Regulation and Standards by adding a new Section 4.6.6 that sets forth standards for electronic message display signs and addressing other matters properly related thereto.
Thank you. Lee Plemmel, for the record, Lee Plemmel, Community Development Director. I'll be giving an overview on this. As read into the record, this ordinance actually has really two distinct things that are going on here. The first is the result of discussions between the city and the Western Nevada College, or as it's put in here, the Nevada System of Higher Education regarding a specific sign. And the second portion related to the how messages are displayed on electronic message display signs is a long-coming amendment that's been talked about for a long time about actually adopting the regulations for brightness and hold times that we have been implementing for the last few years through special use permits for larger signs, but it's been discussed for a long time to bring this amendment to formalize those standards for all electronic message display signs of any size, any new ones throughout the city. And I think I'd like to tackle that one first in my presentation on the message display signs where the new regulations would consider talking about the brightness. So these are International Sign Association standards. As I said, they've been implemented through special use permits. We've actually taken the monitor out on the community center sign out front that was adopted and with those standards and implemented, and we adjusted the brightness of the sign at night to those standards. It's a standard that's starting to be implemented widely across the country, actually, for sign brightness. Also within there, talks about some of the requirements of message hold times and transition times to minimize kind of the motion going on some of these signs. Those are a little bit more discretionary, but these are what we've implemented. So the motion that you see and the transitions you see on the sign outside are within these standards. So that's now what you would typically see on new message center signs with these standards implemented. So we're recommending those standards as part of this ordinance. And we took this opportunity to include those in there because, again, I think the initial impetus, going back to the first part of this, the initial impetus of this ordinance was based on the discussions between the city and the college about a very specific sign, really to promote the community college as an amenity in Carson City, that it's something that this city has and you know, from the college. Ann Hansen is here to speak on behalf of the college if you do have any questions, but in talking to her a little bit, that, you know, we've learned that, you know, a lot of people don't even know there's a college in Carson City. There's a main entrance there, and even when they know there is one, they don't know where it is, and it's hard to find. So the college has been looking for a way in the vicinity of Carson Street and College Parkway of letting, you know, residents know that that's the way to get to the college and that the college is there. I think from the city side and talking to the city manager's office and working with the city, that there's also possibly an opportunity to combine that with the college and allowing some city public service messages to go on that. So there might be a cooperative effort between the city and the college to place this sign at that location, at a location along there, And to get some public service messages on there, as well as information about the college that we have in Carson City. So we've worked with the district attorney's office to come up with an ordinance. I think, you know, off-premise signs can be a touchy subject. Off-premise signs include billboards around the community. We don't allow billboards on along the freeway at this time. You know, we have separation requirements between billboards. We do have some billboards on North Carson Street. So we know we don't want a proliferation of off-premise signs, so we were trying to be careful in writing an ordinance that we were doing something that benefits the community while it doesn't open up this type of off-premise sign to all over the community. So the next one. I do have a map up there. And this map is in your packet. So And honestly, I think the college can tell you what we're looking at is the Save Mart property as a potential site and partner in doing this sign. So again, it's College Parkway, North Carson Street vicinity. In the map here, per the regulations would provide an exemption for signs subject to the limitations that are in the ordinance, which includes the maximum size, the purpose of the sign, and the location with radius and on an arterial. So highlighted on there in yellow is where the cross section of within that certain distance of the college and also an arterial street meet. So that would be the limitations of where this ordinance would apply. I do need to make one correction on the ordinance, and actually it would be an amendment to the ordinance in terms of the size of the sign, because the community center sign that's out front here was intended to be used as the model, and it says 90 square feet. So when I asked about the construction of the sign and how big it was, they told me 90 square feet, and I finally thought about that. I said, I better verify that. That's the size of the message center sign only that's out there. And like this sign, what would be envisioned, there's also below that where it says Carson City Community Center. Below that adds an additional 30 square feet or so. It's a little bit less than that, but basically 30 square feet. So to bring that total sign area out front is a little under 120 square feet. So if the intention is to allow a sign of that area, which I think is the intention and appropriate, which would include some permanent signage that directs people to Western Nevada College, plus the changing message sign, we would change that 90 feet to 120 square feet. And so I think that's a pretty good overview of the purpose and what the ordinance says. So I'd be happy to answer any questions at this point. And as I mentioned, if you have any specific signs of the college, Ann Hansen's here. She doesn't necessarily have any prepared statements on this, but if you have any questions, she's available.
Do you have any questions for staff?
In the sign ordinance, is there a distance between other billboards and signs?
There's a minimum distance between billboards of 1,000 feet.
Okay, because there is a large billboard at the corner of College Parkway.
Yes.
And Carson.
That would, right.
So if,
that would,
if, that, if they went to the other side of the Save-On lot, they would that be more than 1,000 feet?
You know, I could pull up GIS and measure it. I doubt that it would be within it. I doubt that it would be more than 1,000 feet and still be able to be on that property just from thinking about where the other billboards are.
Yeah. So, if we're trying to be helpful and we do this, but we find out that we've shot ourselves in the foot because of another reason.
No, so I think as written, into this exception, which is again intended to limit the possibility of this, as written, it would require 1,000 feet between this sign and any other sign owned by community college, state college, university. So it's not it as written. It would not require 1,000 foot separation from the billboard. And again,
okay.
And intentionally so because of the location and also because there's other limitations and we don't anticipate that there be more than one sign, one such sign anywhere.
I'm sorry, I believe in that. I just didn't want it to be too close to an already existing billboard and have it not be able to put it there. Okay. The other question I have is, since we're using the sign out here as the model, and you said that sign is 120 square feet and it has 90 feet of message, shouldn't we say that? Should not exceed 120 square feet with a message area not to exceed 90 square feet?
With the electronic message display sign not larger than 90 feet,
yes.
that would be appropriate.
Yeah, so that if that's going to be the model, yeah. Then let's make sure that that's how we say it.
Yeah, Lee, I was going to say the same thing. I didn't want to allow it to where they could have a 120-square-foot message sign, you know, so. Any other questions for staff? So what you're saying, Lee, is the way it's written, that it would have to be another college sign within 1,000 square feet, not another billboard or sign. Okay. The applicant, like? Yes. Just state.
Ann Hansen, and I am assistant to the president for external affairs.
Sure. You've read the conditions and all that and are comfortable with all?
Yes, we've looked at that and we feel like it will work. We've got a problem and I think this will help us to resolve it.
Wonderful. Do we have any questions for the applicant? Go ahead, Commissioner.
Have you gone in any kind of conversations with the property owners out there to find a location yet, or is it premature?
You know, I haven't been part of that, but they have been looking at it, and I think that Lee and his team have been looking at that as well, and our president. But no, we haven't gotten any further than that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
I'll bring it back. Further questions for staff or whatever? I have one. Lee, if we do this, then anyone wanting another sign just like they have in the past, they're still going to have to come and get a special use permit, be it on their own property or other property, et cetera.
Anyone else?
I'm saying yes. If anyone else wants to put up a sign off property, they would still have to, like they would have a sign
like
on property, would
any,
have to come.
Any other one would still have to comply with the billboard off-premise sign ordinance, yes.
Any comments from the public? Not seeing any. I'll bring it back. Further discussion, or someone want to make a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move to recommend to the Board of Supervisors an approval of ZCA 16-189. An ordinance amending Title 18, Appendix Carson City Development Standards by amending Division 4 Signs, Chapter 4.4 Administration, Section 4.47 Exemptions, by adding thereto a new subsection 4.4.7.x, which exempts from the division certain off-premise electronic message display signs, amending Title 18, Appendix Carson City Development Standards by amending Division 4 Signs, Chapter 4.6 General Regulations and Standards by adding a new Section 4.6.6 that sets forth standards for electronic measuring display signs and addressing other matters properly related thereto, and including that one change. Or
that would be amending number 6 not to exceed 90 square feet of message sign and up to 120 square feet total.
Total, yes. That's my motion.
Thank you, sir. We have a second by Commissioner Owens. Call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Carries 5-0 with Commissioner left and one abstaining.
Thank you.
Okay. Item F5, MPA-16-170 for possible action, to consider a request to amend the master plan to incorporate an above-ground utility plan that shows corridors designated for construction of above-ground utilities in compliance with NRS 278.165. Are we going to do both of these together? No. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay, this is an amendment to the master plan. NRS requires us to have an above-ground utility plan in our master plan. The plan has to do four things. Number one, we have to have a process for the designation of these corridors. Number two, it has to be consistent with any plans prepared by the Nevada Office of Energy. Number three, we have to ensure continuity of transmission corridors and be consistent with the above-ground utility plans of adjacent jurisdictions. And fourth, we have to be consistent with BLM's resource management plan. I have consulted with the Nevada Office of Energy, Douglas County, Washoe County, Lyon County, BLM, and Sierra Pacific Power. Of those agencies, the only one that has an above-ground utility plan is Washoe County. That would intersect, I should say, with Carson City, is Washoe County. Washoe County's plans intersect with existing overhead lines. The plan has to identify a process for the designation of future lines. Sierra Pacific Power does not have any plans for future lines in Carson City's jurisdiction. So what I am recommending is that goal 1.5E be modified. The goal currently says the city shall coordinate with Sierra Pacific Power and Southwest Gas on the location of new power lines and future facilities necessary to serve the community. I'm suggesting additional language that will say including the designation of above-ground utility corridors on the land use map consistent with NRS 278.165. This will mean, should Sierra Pacific in the future find that they do want to designate an overhead utility corridor in Carson City, the process would be to amend the land use map in Carson City. Right now, I'm not suggesting anything be placed on the land use map because there's no plans, but this will create the process. As you know, when you're considering an amendment to the master plan, you have four findings that you make: consistency with the master plan, compatible land use, the response to changing conditions, and is it consistent with the desired pattern of growth. The amendment's a process. It's not amending the map, it's just creating that process. So staff was able to make all four of these findings in the affirmative. I'll just remind the commission, should you have a request in the future to designate a overhead corridor, you will look at these findings again at that time. So we are recommending approval, and I've included a resolution in your packet, which would show that you're recommending approval of the master plan amendment to the board. And I can answer questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for staff? Seeing none. Is there anyone in the public who wishes to address this item? Mr. Salerno.
I'd like to make a motion. I move to adopt resolution number 2016-PC-R-4, recommending to the Board of Supervisors approval of MPA-16-170, a master plan amendment to amend goal 1.5E of the master plan to provide for future above ground utility corridors to be shown on the land use map of the master plan in compliance with NRS 278.165 based on the findings contained in the staff report.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a second by Mr. Sattler. Is there any further discussion? I'll call for the vote. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion passes unanimously. Item F6, MPA-16-174 for possible action. To make recommendations to the Board of Supervisors regarding the annual master plan report. Mr. Plemmel.
Thank you. And this item, like the other one, was continued from last month as we had a long meeting. But this is our annual master plan report, and actually per NRS, the Planning Commission is required annually to make recommendations to the Board of Supervisors regarding the implementation of the master plan. So what your report is attached. What I'd like to do for the benefit of anybody who might be watching is just to go through some of the graphics and some of the kind of overall indicators that we look at each year as we go through the master plan. It's a lot of similar stuff that we do also annually with growth management that manages the pace of growth in conformance with the master plan. We do that in May. We do this in November, so it's about every 6 months we kind of look at these things. So the first one I'll talk about a little bit is the residential permits, and this one shows them as issued by type. And the first thing you can obviously see is that for the last 9 years, we've had very few residential permits coming through, very little residential construction coming in, especially as it compares to the years prior to that. And our growth rates prior to that, this last year, 2016, which we're almost through, is now the pace of residential growth is back up into that range where, and that number of residential units per year that approach kind of what they were in pre-recession years, not even the higher years, but some of those pre-recession years. A couple of new charts that I've added this time that I haven't shown in growth management before is down there, and the table above there shows the residential permits by type, with the two major categories are single family detached and multifamily. There's some other variations of that. There's single family attached and duplexes, but you know the vast majority either fall into single family detached or multifamily category. So you can see obviously when a 60 unit apartment complex comes in, that takes up 60 growth management units, 60 residential units, so that's a lot. And so I thought, and you could see recently that multifamily development has been a large portion of what's been coming forward in the last 10 years and even a little bit beyond that. So I thought I'd go back and look at the assessor's records and see what percentage of the existing total inventory of housing in Carson City is, and that down the lower left graph is how many is the permits issued since 2000. So that's the last 16 years worth of permits. 30% of them have been 30% have been multifamily, and 64% have been single family detached. And then the one on the lower right is actually the existing residential units out there by type, where there's actually recently, and I was a little bit surprised at this, that of the single-family detached product, we've had more. It's a higher percentage of those coming in since the past 16 years than actually the existing inventory of 56% there, and the multifamily inventory currently in the city is 22% with a single-family attached at 9%, which actually totals about the same as what we've been getting recently. So even though it seems like there's a lot of multifamily projects that have been coming through, it's actually not that out of sync with the existing inventory by units in Carson City. And I think as we you've seen the projects like Lampa Ranch with them coming in with their specific plan area, and there's a mix of single family and multifamily in there. But besides those larger places like that and maybe the Anderson Ranch property, there's going to be a lot of infill that's going to continue to come in. The vacant pieces are going to be a lot of infill. So we might actually see on the new permits the percentage of multifamily coming in might increase. And so what does all this residential growth translate to? You kind of see the same form in this the past population and projected growth, where before the recession, we had residential population growth with Carson City was about 40,000 people in 1990, and we're up to about 58,000, 57,000 in 2005 or so before things really leveled off or declined, and that kind of follows the, you can track that to the permit graph before this as well. So what does that mean if we, you know, picking back up at that pace that we had of development previously? We have the demographer's projection on there, and we have kind of a low and high projection from the city based on different rates. But, you know, it gets us out to a population of 75,000 in, call it, you know, 30 to 40, 50 years from now. So our master plan is a long-range document, and I don't think we're not going to change the master plan in the next 50 years and reevaluate it. But, you know, in looking at where we were in 2006 when it was adopted and where we are today, we haven't seen a lot of growth to date. And just some other, the top chart here is total building permit valuation. And again, this shows residential as a whole, new commercial and other types of permits. And this is another one where, not surprisingly, again, you probably can just notice the pace of development and construction around town, the amount of new commercial construction that we're getting is going to exceed anything we had since, you know, that 2008 time period was the last time we had this much new commercial construction going on. And of course residential is picking up, and actually this is not by calendar year, this is by fiscal year. So the 2016-17 is less than halfway through this year, so we expect it to get back up there to pre-recession levels. And then, of course, this is the last graph I have on this presentation, but it's also included in yours, is the amount of planning applications. With the dark blue bars down at the bottom are applications coming to the Planning Commission, and then the total number of planning applications are there. And again, like with everything else, they're picking back up again. So here's some of the conclusions, again, that are in your report, and I'll just talk a little bit about before getting to recommendations on the next page. We know that master plan's a long-term policy document, and as I mentioned, it's, you know, providing for growth over the next 30 to 50 years. And again, not that we're not going to review it and update it in that long, but it does have a land use plan that accommodates growth for a long time. There have been few requests for master plan changes since 2006. So one of the indicators, if there's something wrong, maybe we get a lot of requests for changes to the master plan. We've had, aside from public transfers of land and master plan changes related to that, and also, I guess, taking aside the Lampa Ranch, which is a specific plan area that our adopted master plan said needed to have that master plan amendment, we've actually only had one property owner initiated master plan amendment for 5.6 acres of change, and you reviewed that a couple months ago. That was the Vintage project. So that's the first time we've actually had a property owner initiated master plan amendment since the adoption of the master plan. Yeah, as I note there, there's, you know, the master plan provides for broad policy statements. I think within those statements, if there's some areas that we need to fix in terms of code amendments, I think we have the basic framework to do that now. And with my last bullet there, you may have caught in the staff report that I feel maybe you might feel I'm whining too much about a lot about not having the staff or time or money to do any major updates, but I don't. So kind of backing off that a little bit, and, you know, I truly don't think there's something functionally wrong with the master plan as it is, as a broad policy document, but I don't want to discourage this Planning Commission from making recommendations to changes, even if because of budget reasons or other reasons the city's not able to pursue it this year or next year. If there are things that we need to get on the agenda for master plan amendments or reviews, I think you should certainly make those recommendations. But to that point, I think there are some things we can do in 2017 to start towards reviewing the master plan and seeing where there are areas that would help. So I think, you know, for the first recommendation as is in there is to continue to pursue the implementation strategies that are currently in the master plan. And we'll do those as directed by the Board of Supervisors pursuant to the city strategic plan. So in this presentation, that's the first time this came up, but it reminds me to talk about that a little bit. So last year, the board adopted a strategic plan, and with the new board member, well, actually, I think it's regardless of whether it was new board member or not, early this year, you know, the city manager plans on having a retreat with the Board of Supervisors and even updating that strategic plan again. But I think that strategic plan is going to be more important as we go forward, and tying our master plan activities to that strategic plan for the city. The board's going to be tying the budget to the strategic plan. So as we go forward over the next couple of years, you'll see a little bit more about that strategic plan, and I think you'll see the strategic plan start to get beefed up. So I just wanted to make that point. But to some other recommendations. So after talking with the chairman about this, the master plan, this annual review specifically, and you know, we thought there was a couple other things we can be doing in 2017, and I think the first thing is maybe to have a master plan 101 session with the planning commission and other training, and we'll go through the master plan, looking at the policies and how the policy implications of the master plan, you know, affect your decisions. You know, what the purpose is, the legal framework of it, and maybe start looking at the master plan with certain areas. So I think I'd like to, you know, time permitting, as we get lighter agendas, we want to prepare to bring that to the Planning Commission this year. We're doing something similar with the Planning 101 course, actually, for a lot of city staff, and with the development really picking up and all the different departments getting stressed and not having done a whole lot of subdivision maps in the last 10 years and having new staff, we're realizing that with all this new stuff, we got to retrain everybody again. We got to remind people how these processes work. So I think that's something we'll want to bring back. And as I mentioned, I made sure to point this out to Elise before she leaves because we've been interested in, but we'll have the school district come in and give a presentation on how they're looking at growth. They have a master plan committee, so how are they approaching growth? So when these big projects come in and you have questions, you know, we're gonna invite somebody from the school district to come in and show you how they're looking at growth, what their capital improvement plans are for the next 2 years, next 5 years, and what they might look at beyond that. And I think that's going to be helpful for the Planning Commission as you review these developments coming in. So we'll definitely set that up, and probably early in the year. And then finally, another suggestion was provide an economic development report. And I'll work with the Office of Business Development to kind of see what that might include and who we might bring in. But, you know, I think our goal for 2017 is to just provide more information to the Planning Commission to help you understand the master plan and help make better decisions pursuant to that during the year. So those are our recommendations. I'd say in your action, if you just move to provide acceptance of the master plan annual report as recommended in the motion there, I'll forward these recommendations to the Board of Supervisors unless you have others that you'd like to add. So I'll be happy to take questions at this point.
All right, Mr. Sattler.
Yeah, Lee, would it be easier for the Master Plan 101 if you had a meeting with the city people to just all attend the same meeting, to save doing that several times?
Yeah, we thought, yeah, the staff doesn't necessarily need Master Plan 101 training, but that's more internal processes. I mean, what I was mentioning was we plan on meeting with them to help them understand behind the scenes how a project even gets here. Behind the scenes,
I thought you were referring to city staff more than planning staff.
Well, other departments.
It would be a different thing for us.
And subsequent to your approval, how we process all the plans that come in to get from Planning Commission board approval to construction, and how those approvals relate.
And along that same line, how often normally do they? I mean, as long as they bring master plan amendments through us and the board, do you really have to go back and look at the total map? I mean, how often would you go to look to re-amend or whatever?
Right. So does Douglas County have a 10-year review built into their master plan. So some communities say we are going to review and update the master plan in every 10 years, or maybe it's some other time frame. Some say 20 years. This is a 20-year plan. In our master plan, we haven't set a specific date. There's not a statutory requirement to do a complete review within any, in Nevada, there's not anyway. There's not a statutory requirement to do a review within any time period.
Well, it's like a living document anyway. And when was it last reviewed, do you know?
Well, 2006 was the adoption of it, yeah. So we're, so this is, yeah, we went through the, past the 10-year anniversary this year.
Any other questions? Reading through your report, Lee, I was very happy to see that you're continuing to work on the downtown parking issue, and I would just encourage that. Or I had a question as to, you know, to your knowledge, has the requirement that we impose the current parking standards sort of put a limitation on development proposals in the downtown mixed use area?
So far I don't think this our current standards you talk about the fee in lieu and other
I'm talking about is, you know, if a developer comes in and he right now he's going to see what our current parking standards are,
right?
And are those limiting, you know, is he going to say those are crazy for a downtown mixed use district, I'm not even going to consider doing a project here? Have anybody come in with that kind of issues?
So far, you know, again, you know, and part of it, remember, in the last 10 years, there hasn't been a lot of development, whether or not they had to provide a single parking space or not. But so there's actually one project where, fortunately, it was solvable because they own property adjacent to, you know, talking about the old Citibank building project. And fortunately, they own property across the street where they could come to the planning commission to get the special use permit to use that parking rather than maybe have some of the other alternatives that we might look at. So to date, it hasn't prevented any development from occurring. But again, I think it's on the list as something we need to look at, to be aware of, so we have appropriate downtown parking alternatives.
Yeah, I would definitely encourage moving forward as quickly as possible on that item. And then a question, when you were talking about the mix of multifamily and single family, and the Citibank, were you looking at that as attached single family attached, or is that considered multifamily? Do you remember?
That was multifamily.
Multifamily, even though it's basic, it could be condominium units or.
So if they were condominium units, that's what a single family attached product is. Is okay. a townhome, something that you can buy individually.
Okay.
Is a single family attached,
okay.
And if it's three or more units on one property,
roof.
It's multifamily.
On one property.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So my comment is just because it's multifamily doesn't mean that it's not, you know, I think that there are types of multifamily that are perfectly acceptable and can be mixed into existing residential neighborhoods and so I don't have any problem with that mix. Let's see, one other question. I have to read my notes. Actually, I think you've addressed it. Can the Planning Commission better coordinate with schools, hospital, healthcare, community, and economic development players to understand community needs? So if we can move forward on those, you know, communications, that would be really helpful. That's all I had. Any other questions or comments?
Just
Mr.
One.
Borders.
In your recommendation, Lee, that we meet with the school, because, you know, you and I and some others are involved in some of that, but would it not be appropriate also to include the hospital? because that's a pretty large campus also, and they have some impacts on our community.
Right, and that's what he mentioned. He threw healthcare into there. That's not on this list, but something. I know I can get the school here. I know the school has plans that they can present to you. And just kind of thinking, sitting here, that it's that we ask the Carson Tahoe Hospital every year under growth management to comment on the number of residential permits that we're going to allow each year. We haven't received comments from them in a number of years. That's probably the appropriate time to have the discussion, and I'll reach out to them specifically to make sure to try to get comments on them this year.
Okay, any other discussion? I believe this requires a motion. Anyone like to make a motion?
Mr. Chairman, Borders. I'd like to move to recommend to the Board of Supervisors acceptance of the Master Plan Annual Report.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a second by Mr. Owen. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with one absent.
Good job.
Okay, the public hearing is now closed. Staff reports.
I was just to update you really quickly on items that were previously before the board and went to the board in December. On December 1st, the Vintage Project finally made it to the Board of Supervisors, and they, with the amendments that were required by the Planning Commission to the handbook, to the PUD handbook, and other things, and it was, what was the vote on that? It was approved.
They said 4-1.
Yeah, it wasn't 4-1. It was 3-1, I think. I don't think there. Yeah.
Oh, it was 3-1.
Yeah.
I didn't remember.
And it was approved 3-1 with some modification. If you have any questions on that. Won't get into it too much right now, but if you have any questions on that, you can certainly contact me. We've received applications for the January meeting. We have a application from Public Works for an abandonment of properties along Clear Creek Road. We have a special use permit for a cell tower, a stealth cell tower on Fall Street in the downtown area south of the Capitol. And then we'll also be bringing forward a zoning code amendment to do some cleanup to the definition of single-family residential related to NRS provisions, but that's kind of a cleanup item. And that'll be it for on the agenda for January. That's all I have.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hope, you have anything you want to add, District Attorney? Okay. Commissioners. Mr. Sattler.
I just want to take the opportunity for staff and everyone to wish everyone a very happy holiday season and a Merry Christmas. So,
thank you.
Same to you.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting now that the elections.
Would you?
Now that the elections are over, there's several people that became commonplace here that no longer come by.
Okay, I have a couple things that I'd like to at least throw out there, where I don't want to get into big discussions with them about them tonight. But the first is on the Vintage Project. I attended the Board of Commissioners meeting, or the Board of Supervisors meeting, and it struck me that in the end, the project that they approved was not the project that the Board of Commissioners or the Planning Commission approved, because it was my understanding that the Planning Commission approved a project that was 55 and older and, in fact, required that be put into a document to ensure that. The Board of Supervisors removed that completely, and so now we have a project that I don't know whether the Planning Commission would have approved it under those conditions. And so just think about that so for the next time this type of issue comes up. And then my other question, and this is something that I'd like everybody to think about, and including the district attorney and staff, and it revolves around conditions for making approvals. You know, master plan amendments, special use permits, all have to, the Planning Commission has to be able to make findings in order to make those approvals. But my question is, just because you can make the findings, does that mean that you have to make the approval? There are many, many applications that are discretionary on the part of the Planning Commission. And just because you can make a positive finding in support of the project doesn't mean that the project has to be approved. And again, I'd like people to just to remember that when making decisions. Mr. Plummer.
I just want to, on that, because we had the conversation a little bit, and it, just to make sure they understand too, though, that's true. You don't have to approve it, but you should make it legal. You should then make findings for denial, for the legal record.
Or identify the findings you don't agree right. with that would is the reason you're voting against, and that's kind of a requirement, correct?
I'm not sure that it's always in the front of our minds when we're making decisions, and I just want to make sure that, you know, when we do make a decision of some import, they're all important, but some are more important than others, that we keep that in mind.
I'd like to ask
Mr. Sapper, or Mr. Salerno.
I'd like to ask the question. The Vintage Project was approved. And the care facilities, are they required to follow the plan that they submitted, or will they come back with a revised plan in order to better or adequately provide for the people who are going to live there? I'm talking about the care facilities.
What was in the packet? Feedback. Okay. Okay. What was in the packet was a conceptual plan. I know particularly I remember sitting with Commissioner Borders, and he was very concerned about the floor plans and the adequacy of them for the folks who would be staying at those facilities. And I actually had a conversation with the applicant prior to the Planning Commission meeting, and they stressed this is preliminary. Now, they will flesh out the details of their floor plans, but that will not be brought forward to the Planning Commission. That will be handled administratively.
Thank you. I, as an architect, I can tell you that if they proceed with the plan as was submitted to us, it will not function properly. The kitchens are far too small, totally inadequate. The housing that they've provided will not meet the current day requirements of housing because, you know, for instance, one minor thing, the two-bedroom units have no direct access to the bathroom from either of the bedrooms that they've provided. The marketing will not work for them if they do, in fact, build that kind of facility. Because things have changed in recent years. You've got to design houses in accordance with today's standards. So that was one of the big concerns I had, even though I felt that it was an appropriate location for what they intended and voted for it.
Mr. Sadler.
The three, we're okay to mention, I believe the three main things that the board changed was the over 55, the two people per facility, and also that the cottages, they would at least put a kitchenette in or something so the people wouldn't have, Supervisor Abad was asking for that, so they wouldn't have to necessarily eat.
I remember the conversation with the supervisor concerned about the ability to have wet bars, and I think there was discussion about whether or not staff would be okay with them having wet bars in the individual units in the congregate care, but that did not get memorialized into a condition of approval.
Because I know Supervisor Abad was worried about the cottages not having the ability to cook some soup or do something, that they should at least have a kitchenette, and I know they said they'd consider that, but it wasn't part of it then.
No, what we're calling dwellings, the detached units, all have kitchens. They're all full dwelling units. It was the units within the congregate care, and there was discussion about whether or not they'd be authorized to have a wet bar as opposed to full kitchen facilities, and the answer was yes, they could have a wet bar and still not be a dwelling.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further discussion? I will entertain a motion for adjournment. Oh, public comment. Any additional public comment? Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion for adjournment.
I motion to adjourn.
A second. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you, and Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas to everybody also.
Nice to be able to say Merry Christmas now.
I've never had a problem with it. I've never had a problem.
I didn't either, but, you know.
Well, I don't have a problem with people saying Happy Holidays.